From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. An unprecedented trial began in Germany on Thursday with a former high-ranking Syrian intelligence officer facing a German courtroom in the city of Koblenz on charges of crimes against humanity. 57-year-old Anwar Raslan is accused of overseeing the torture of prisoners, including at least 57 who died at Al-Khatib prison in Syria's capital of Damascus in 2011 and 12. A second yet unnamed suspect will also be tried for aiding and abetting a crime against humanity in 2011. Both men sought asylum in Germany in 2014 and have lived openly under their own names among Syrian refugees, according to reports in the German media. In February of last year, they were arrested by German police. This is the first legal proceeding alleging state-sponsored torture in Syria, and it comes as Germany is lifting a lockdown to curb the coronavirus pandemic. For more on that, we go to Moscow to speak with analyst Mark Sloboda. Mark?
Yeah, hi, Don. Thanks for having me on CPR. It's always an honor and a pleasure. And so, yeah, this is, I just take when I see a report like this as a slap in the face or just a sign that European exceptionalism and that Europe are full partners, all right, of U.S.-led global hegemony, and in fact, as in the case here, it often seems they are pushing this as much, if not more, particularly under the Donald Trump administration, where they feel that U.S. isn't living up to the presumed duties of leading U.S.-led Western hegemony. So what's going on is a Germany's higher regional court in Koblenz, all right, is holding two Syrians who were former intelligence members, agents in the Syrian government that then left Syria, defected or moved to Germany, and right. We can talk about their stupidity for doing that.
In 2014.
There's one higher and one lower ranking official.
Right.
They are accused of torture at a detention center in Syria. So one of them is accused of being complicit in the torture of at least 4,000 people,
right?
Which seems like quite an accomplishment for anyone.
Right.
The murder of 58 people, sexual assaults, and so on. And this actually took place before the war broke out, because the crimes he's being accused of took place before he fled Syria in 2012.
Right.
So this is, I mean, they're accusing them of war crimes. Technically, I'm surprised that they're not considered crimes against humanity or something, since there wasn't an active war going on.
Yeah, that's a charge against the second. Yeah, Anwar Raslan was like one of the heads of this prison, I guess, Al-Khatib prison in Damascus. And I guess he was accused of overseeing the torture of more than 4,000 prisoners. That must mean they probably had 4,000 prisoners in the prison, and they were accused of torturing everybody. But the second side, and he's accused of war crimes and crimes against humanity, and then the second suspect is being tried for aiding and abetting a crime against humanity in Syria in 2011. So, you know, I don't know how they mix it all up if you look at the actual... I haven't looked yet at the actual criminal complaint, but, you know, that's kind of how they're... It's like they're, you know, throwing it against the wall to see what'll stick, I guess.
Yeah, so you might ask the question, why aren't they being tried in The Hague? Why aren't they being tried in a war crimes tribunal? if the, you know, this is the case, why aren't they there? And of course, because of the international geopolitical conflict over Syria, where, you know, numerous Western governments have been involved in a long proxy war and to try to overthrow the Syrian government, and then the U.S. is now directly military occupying Syria while Russia is actively aiding the Syrian government, and China at least politically supports the Syrian government. So of course there's no movement towards any types of trying anyone for any war crimes in Syria, and vice a huge political change in several of these countries that sit on the permanent members on the Security Council. There is never likely to be, because they would certainly block any such efforts. So they are being tried in Germany under a expansive principle or reading of international law.
Universal jurisdiction, right?
Universal jurisdiction, saying that our courts can be the judge of any supposed international crime that takes place anywhere in the world, which is much like the U.S.'s own extension of their legal system to the entirety of the world as well, which... it brings up some interesting questions. Could U.S. officials be tried? U.S. British officials be tried in Russia for conducting crimes of aggression? Aggression is right. Not only the high crime under the UN Charter. A proxy war, an invasion. All of these things, of course, constitute that. And you know. Even lesser things such as economic war or a covert war, so on. All of those things would qualify as war crimes. Even aggression, which was once considered the remit of the International Court of Justice, is now also considered aggression. Is also considered a war crime under the International Criminal Court as well. So you could charge the state, you could charge right. The individuals responsible in multiple things. But of course, Germany won't do that. And in fact, previously, several German NGOs tried to bring torture charges against U.S. officials.
Right.
CIA agents. And one of those CIA agents, named... that there was a request that the German government issue an arrest warrant for these individuals wanted for torture. You might recognize her name. Her name is Gina Haspel. Mm-hmm. Right. Of course, the German government never did issue any type of arrest warrant for Gina Haspel or any of the other of the dozen plus CIA agents and government officials that people requested that the German government try. And Gina Haspel is, of course, now the director of the Central Intelligence Agency.
Right. That's
something
right.
That she was also known by her, affectionately by her colleagues as Bloody Gina Haspel for running black CIA rendition and torture sites that existed in European countries.
Right, that's right.
Members of the EU, including Poland and Romania.
That's right.
And Lithuania. Yep. And that 54 countries around the world, including Germany, were complicit in helping the CIA to kidnap, right. Detain, and torture people around the world through the use of air bases for transit of rendition subjects and so on. And it, of course, gets even more ridiculous. There was torture in Syria, of course, right? The Syrian government was torturing people. How do we know that? Because the CIA and MI5 sent people there to be tortured,
right.
And were present asking the questions while they were being tortured. Right. This was at the very least in the 2000s.
Right.
So this all strikes me as rather absurd type of victors, or you want to call it hegemon's justice, or so on. Yes, the Syrian government tortured people. We sent jihadis and a couple of innocent people to be tortured there all the time.
They did it for us. That's right.
The fact that now some Syrian former government officials who happen to fall into Germany's hands are being tried, and not Germany's own allies, tells me that there is very little principle involved here. Right. When you selectively choose among torturers you choose to try and apply your unique brand of universal justice to, and not to others, that is not principle, right? That is the weaponization of these German courts, the weaponization of an extension of international law against some countries, while of course ignoring the aggressors against that country.
You know, there's some real interesting things about this. The choice of basically the question of selective enforcement. You know, you should call victors justice, right? Absolutely. There are some things under international law that can be asserted under, where you can assert universal jurisdiction. Certain crimes against humanity, hijacking, war crimes, genocide, etc. And there are some under treaty where the state parties are obliged to use universal jurisdiction. And that includes, for example, the 1973 Convention Against Apartheid. If someone were to bring a complaint in a court, say in the court in Germany, that recognizes the concept, the legitimacy of universal jurisdiction, say against Israel for practicing apartheid against the Palestinians, they would be, it seems there would be like a mandate for them to hear the case. Because under the terms of the treaty, it's an obligation on the state parties as opposed to, something optional to them. And so I don't know what kind of, legal problems they might be opening up for themselves. But I think it's also an interesting choice of Germany. I mean, Spain has done this before, right? We've seen this with, what's his name, from Chile, for example. Yeah, Pinochet. And some other cases, and Spain is one of the old colonial powers. Previous to World War II, certainly, you had all the old colonial powers still had their colonies, and then the process of decolonization, whether in name or in fact, took place, and left the United States pretty much as the primary colonial power around the world. Germany was an ascendant one that never really got established. It didn't start to rise until after everybody else had divvied up the world. And now, as the center of a European Union, even if it's a rump European Union, that's seeking to play on the international stage. We saw France go back into Africa during the Obama administration. They peeled off Cote d'Ivoire, Mali, and a couple of others. In Algeria, they're trying to go back, etc. Germany, this seems like, a very sort of almost like a, an opening shot for them to try to become a world colonial power or a junior partner.
Yeah, I think they are at least fully, complicit and supportive of U.S.-led Western hegemony. This extension of their courts to the rest of the world like this is a pale imitation of what the U.S. has already done on numerous occasions. There are a number of Russian citizens held and being tried in the U.S. Russia has no extradition treaty with the United States, for them to charge them is of course. It is a violation of international legal principles that those citizens are the responsibility of their own government that they have citizenship in. And again, when this is done selectively, and of course it is only ever done selectively, you don't have, you know, justice being done. What you have done is weaponization, and right. A form of tyranny. We see this actually repeatedly at the war crimes tribunals over events in the former Yugoslavia. The fact that people are being charged with war crimes, of course, particularly Serbians during the conflicts there, but U.S. leaders, European leaders were never charged over their attack without the approval of the Security Council on Serbia, the bombing of the country, the invasion of the country, the partition of the country, the handing over of a chunk of Serbia, Kosovo, the area of Kosovo, to the Kosovo Liberation Army, which still runs the country, which had just previously been listed by the United States as a terrorist organization,
right,
up until they were politically useful for the U.S. in splintering, the Serbia even further down, and you know where there is Camp Bondsteel, one of the largest U.S. Military bases in the world now. In fact, yeah, you could very well say that other than a miniature narco state and a recruiting source for international jihadism, including ISIS, that Kosovo is little more
right.
than a U.S. military base.
Yep. Yeah.
A NATO protectorate.
So how does this fit into the big picture in Syria? You know, we haven't really discussed Syria in a few weeks, so maybe we can kind of update people on how the whole struggle around that is going and how some of this fits into it, too.
Yeah, the last ceasefire between, agreed to by Russia and Turkey and accepted on either side by the Syrian government and its other allies, and on the Turkish side by Al-Qaeda, I guess, is who they were, Hayat Tahrir al-Sham and the other, their other jihadi proxies that they represent in Idlib, has more or less held in that its conflict on the ground is continual but minor. There were repeated attempts by Hayat Tahrir al-Sham and other jihadists to block joint Russian-Turkish patrols along the M4 highway, and Turkey, not through the use of military force, but through the use of, shall we say, buying out various jihadis and getting them, coercing their less compliant proxies to adhere to this right now. There have at last been not total patrols along the M4 highway, which is now the dividing line, shall we say, between Syrian Idlib and Turkish-supported Al-Qaeda-occupied Idlib. That highway is now the dividing line between them. But that last ceasefire, again, is holding at least at a political level. And Turkey seems to be making somewhat greater efforts. What Turkey's goal right here now is to get the various hardcore terrorist groups, and we're talking Al-Qaeda, Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, the Turkestan Islamic Party, Khiras al-Din, and a couple of others, to basically disband in name and accept full Turkish proxy status. You know, I don't know if it actually involves shaving off their beards. Somehow I doubt that. I doubt even that much is necessary. But the Russian government has previously said that Turkey must not, this is not a solution, that Turkey cannot just take hardcore jihadists and terrorists and say, oh, they've got a new name, and they're officially right. our proxies in Syria now. Right. Therefore, everything's cool.
Right.
And Russia says that it's not acceptable. But that is where we're at this point. And the Erdogan regime seems to be making greater efforts to dissolve Hayat Tahrir al-Sham into their other proxy forces, which would be the so-called Syria National Army and the National Liberation Front, which is now their big unified proxy forces. This was actually a big advantage for Syria and Russia all through the Syrian conflict, a decade of it now, half of it with Russia involved, is that various jihadist groups were always fighting each other.
Right.
Almost as much as they were the Syrian government.
Right. Even the ones sponsored by the U.S., right? We had the ones that were sponsored by the Pentagon shooting at the ones sponsored by Langley, et cetera. Yeah,
well, that was, in particular, we had the Kurds sponsored by the Pentagon that were fighting against the CIA-backed jihadists that was happening during the Obama years. That was basically a proxy war between two U.S. government agencies in Syria. It was absolutely insane. Turkey is making greater efforts to dissolve these units to make them more politically acceptable as their proxy force for the long-term ownership of northern Syria. The Turkish government believes it can get Russia and Syria to accept some type of compromise whereby these regions in some future constitutional settlement are given a type of federalization or autonomy from Damascus. And while they would still probably be part of Syria, Turkey wouldn't try to annex them directly,
right,
they would actually owe their loyalty and all their support to Istanbul rather than Damascus. And this is something that obviously the Syrian government can never accept. And whether Russia can accept it or not, it's in the long term is another question, because if the only alternative to that is open war with Turkey, it's not clear. At the very least, Russia, I think, would prefer Turkish-controlled proxies to a loosely Turkly aligned al-Qaeda,
right,
governing a large section of Syria, which of course would be a terrorist threat,
right,
not just to Syria and a threat to the Syrian government, but a terrorist threat to the whole world as Russia sees it now, including,
right,
of course, Russia. There's still 2,000 to 3,000 Russian and former Soviet jihadists in Idlib, fighting with Turkish support at this point. It's really only Turkey.
Right.
Now, this is still kind of taking a somewhat of a back seat now because, of course, Turkey is being hit hard, as many countries are, Russia not absent from that anymore, by COVID-19, by the global pandemic. And there are tens of thousands of confirmed cases in Turkey at this point, a country where its state media pundits were just over a month ago were proclaiming that because of Turkish genetics, they would never be affected by COVID-19, which caused me no little amount of amusement online. Amusement at the pundits. No such amusement, of course, for the poor Turkish people suffering from
right,
this, as
course, right,
so many around the world are.
Right.
Even the conflict in Syria, you know, while some low level conflict is taking place almost daily, between Turkish-backed proxies and the Syrian government, and still attacks on Russian airbase, it is kept at a low-level simmer for the moment. Not quite a frozen conflict, but definitely a chilled one. There's no sign that either Turkey or the Syrian government is ready to make anywhere in the short term a push for Syria either to regain the rest of Idlib or for Turkey to expand the territory controlled in northern Syria by their proxies.
Right. So, geez, I mean, I can see certainly Russia's preference for, these characters to have a daddy, because if the children misbehave, you can go knock on daddy's door and hold daddy accountable. And
obviously the Russian government's preference in a perfect world would be to have no jihadis
Syria. Right.
But the Russian government also does not want direct open war with Turkey or the United States,
right.
Or Israel, for that matter. That's not why they're there.
Right. No sane person wants war.
They're
right.
still trying to maneuver Turkey into abandoning the support for the jihadis and leaving of their own will, trying the carrot rather than the stick approach.
Right.
And it's worked pretty good up until now, but right. I've always said on the show many, many times that Turkey is actually the major problem for any, final resolution for the Syrian government to recover all of its own territory from this conflict. And that remains true to this day.
Yeah, that's going to be true as long as Erdogan's there and his, imaginings of a, return to the Ottoman Empire or whatever. Is any real estate he can grab?
The sorry thing is that even if Erdogan was gone, if
right.
Erdogan died of coronavirus, tomorrow
right.
in some type of karmic justice,
right.
or in a terrorist attack, that would be even more karmic
right.
justice,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah.
Then there's no guarantee that the person who replaced him would be any better, because
right.
the AKP and their allied nationalists
right.
Do have a electoral lock on Turkey
right.
thus far.
Right.
The support of the Turkish people.
Had many many purges in between,
Turkey still has more journalists in prison
right.
than the rest of the world put together.
That's right, yep. Yep.
A NATO member.
It's true. Looking forward at this, what do you think are going to be the consequences of this trial? Either if there's a conviction or an acquittal.
Yeah, I can only see a conviction, of course. I can't imagine. This is a
kangaroo
court,
sure.
court, as far as I'm concerned, a sham court, selective
yeah.
justice, selective. I can't see them, doing anything but. And because these particular officials are already in German hands, doubtless
right.
the sentence will be carried out. But other countries around the world will, of course, not politically. Russia and China, of course, in particular, will not accept this principle being extended in a wider reach, beyond this case. Certainly not against their own government officials and militaries in the region. The U.S. has already made clear that they will accept no other government or international court to ever hold trial over their own military and government officials. There's absolutely no reason why Russia or China should accept kangaroo justice, victor's justice being applied on them. But certainly whenever anyone falls into the Europeans' hands, you can expect, this to continue. It will become more common,
yeah.
if not a truly universal jurisdiction or principle. I am sure that such things will continue into the future, and in a way, these European courts are really serving as an extension of the U.S.'s own courts of U.S. hegemony.
Mark, thank you very much. We're out of time, and maybe we can pick it up next week with that case.
Great.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.